who still named him Turncloak. Though Maester Aemon said his wound was healing well, John bore other scars, deeper than the ones around his eye.
"He grieves for his wildling girl, and for his brothers."
"It's strange," he said to Sam. "Craster had no love for Mance, nor Mance for Craster, but now Craster's daughter is feeding Mance's son."
"I have the milk," Gilly said, her voice soft and shy. "Mine only takes a little. He's not so greedy as this one."
The wildling woman Val turned to face them.
"I've heard the Queen's men saying that the Red Woman means to give Mance to the fire as soon as he's strong enough."
John gave her a weary look. "Mance is a deserter from the Night's Watch. The penalty for that is death. If the Watch had taken him, he would have been hanged by now. But he's the King's captive, and no one knows the King's mind but the Red Woman."
"I want to see him," Val said. "I want to show him his son. He deserves that much before you kill him."
Sam tried to explain.
"No one is permitted to see him but Maester Aemon, my lady."
"If it were in my power, Mance could hold his son." John's smile was gone. "I'm sorry, Val." He turned away. "Sam and I have duties to return to. Well, Sam does anyway. We'll ask about your seeing Mance. That's all I can promise." Sam lingered long enough to give Gilly's hand a squeeze and promised to return again after supper. Then he hurried after. There were guards outside the door, Queen's men with spears. John was halfway down the steps, but he waited when he heard Sam puffing after him. "You're more than fond of Gilly, aren't you?" Sam reddened.
"Gilly's good. She's good and kind."
He was glad that his long nightmare was done, glad to be back with his brothers at Castle Black. But some nights, alone in his cell, he thought of how warm Gilly had been when they curled up beneath the firs with a babe between them.
She made me braver, John. Not brave, but braver."
"You know you cannot keep her," John said gently. "No more than I could stay with Ygritte." "You said the word, Sam, the same as I did, the same as all of us."
"I know. Gilly said she'd be a wife to me, but I told her about the words and what they meant. I don't know if that made her sad or glad, but I told her."
He swallowed nervously and said,
"John, could there be honour in a lie if it were told for a good purpose?"
"It would depend on the lie and the purpose, I suppose." John looked at Sam. "I wouldn't advise it. You're not made to lie, Sam. You blush and squeak and stammer."
"I do," said Sam. "But I could lie in a letter. I'm better with a quill in hand. I had a thought. When things are more settled here, I thought maybe the best thing for Gilly, I thought I might send her to Horn Hill, to my mother and sisters and my father. If Gilly were to say the babe was mine,"
he was blushing again,
"my mother would want him, I know. She would find some place for Gilly, some kind of service. It wouldn't be as hard as serving Craster, and Lord Randolph, he would never say so, but he might be pleased to believe I got a bastard on some wildling girl. At least it would prove I was man enough to lie with a woman and father a child. He told me once that I was sure to die a maiden, that no woman would ever, you know. John, if I did this, wrote this lie, would that be a good thing? The life the boy would have?"
"Growing up a bastard in his grandfather's castle?" John shrugged. "That depends in great part on your father and what sort of boy this is. If he takes after you..."
"He won't. Craster's his real father. You saw him. He was hard as an old tree stump, and Gilly is stronger than she looks."
"If the boy shows any skill, with sword or lance, he should have a place with your father's household guard at the least," John said. It's not unknown for bastards to be trained as squires and raised to knighthood. But you'd best be sure Gilly can play this game convincingly. From what you've told me of Lord Randall, I doubt he would take kindly to being deceived. More guards were posted on the steps outside the tower. These were king's men, though. Sam had quickly learned the difference. The king's men were as earthy and impious as any other soldiers, but the queen's men were fervid in their devotion to Melisande of Achailly and her Lord of Light.
"Are you going to the practice yard again?"
Sam asked as they crossed the yard.
"Is it wise to train so hard before your leg's done healing?"
John shrugged. "What else is there for me to do? Marsh has removed me from duty, for fear that I'm still a turncloak."
"It's only a few who believe that," Sam assured him. "Sir Alistair and his friends. Most of the brothers know better. King Stannis knows as well, I'll wager. You brought in the Horn of Winter and captured Mance Rayder's son."
"All I did was protect Val and the babe against Lutus when the wildlings fled, and keep them there until the rangers found us. I never captured anyone. King Stannis keeps his men well in hand, that's plain. He lets them plunder some, but I've only heard of 3 wildling women being raped, and the men who did it have all been gelded. I suppose I should have been killing the free folk as they ran. Sir Alistair has been putting it about that the only time I bared my sword was to defend our foes. I failed to kill Mance Rayder because I was in league with him, he says.
That's only Sir Alistair, Sam said. Everyone knows the sort of man he is.
With his noble birth, his knighthood, and his long years in the watch, Sir Alistair Thorne might have been a strong challenger for the Lord Commander's title. But almost all the men he'd trained during his years as master-at-arms, despised him. His name had been offered, of course, but after running a weak 6th on the first day, and actually losing votes on the 2nd, Thorne had withdrawn to support Lord Janus Slint. What everyone knows is that Sir Alistair is a knight from a noble line, and true-born, while I am the bastard who killed Curran Halfhand and bedded with a spearwife, the Warg, I've heard them call me. How can I be a warg without a wolf, I ask you? His mouth twisted. I don't even dream of ghosts any more. All my dreams are of the crypts of the stone kings on their thrones. Sometimes I hear Rob's voice and my father's, as if they were at a feast. But there's a wall between us, and I know that no place has been set for me.
The living have no place at the feasts of the dead.
It tore the heart from Sam to hold his silence then.
"Bran's not dead, John,"
he wanted to say.
"He's with friends, and they're going north on a giant elk to find a 3-eyed crow in the depths of the haunted forest."
It sounded so mad that there were times Sam Tarley thought he must have dreamt it all, conjured it whole from fever and fear and hunger. But he would have blurted it out anyway, if he had not given his word. 3 times he had sworn to keep the secret. Once to Bran himself, once to that strange boy, Jojen Reed, and last of all to Cold Hands. "The world believes the boy is dead," his rescuer had said as they parted. "Let his bones lie undisturbed. We want no seekers coming after us. Swear it, Samwell of the Night's Watch, swear it, for the life you owe me." Miserable, Sam shifted his weight and said,
"Lord Janus will never be chosen Lord Commander."
It was the best comfort he had to offer, John. The only comfort.
"That won't happen."
"Sam, you're a sweet fool. Open your eyes. It's been happening for days." John pushed his hair back out of his eyes and said, "I may know nothing, but I know that. Now pray excuse me. I need to hit someone very hard with a sword." There was naught that Sam could do but watch him stride off toward the armory and the practice yard. That was where Jon Snow spent most of his waking hours. With Sir Andrew dead and Sir Alistair disinterested, Castle Black had no master-at-arms, so Jon had taken it on himself to work with some of the rawer recruits, Satin, Horse, Hop Robin with his club foot, Aaron, and Emmerich. and when they had duties, he would train alone for hours with sword and shield and spear, or match himself against anyone who cared to take him on.
"Sam, you're a sweet fool," he could hear John saying, all the way back to the Maester's keep. "Open your eyes. It's been happening for days."
Could he be right? A man needed the votes of two-thirds of the sworn brothers to become the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, and after 9 days and 9 votes, no one was even close to that. Lord Janus had been gaining, true, creeping up past first Burnmarsh and then Uther Jarvik, but he was still well behind Sir Dennis Mallister of the Shadow Tower and Cutter Pike of Eastwatch by the Sea.
"One of them will be the new Lord Commander, surely,"
Sam told himself. Stannis had posted guards outside the Maester's door, too. Within, the rooms were hot and crowded with the wounded from the battle. Black brothers, kingsmen, and queensmen, all three. Clydus was shuffling amongst them with flagons of goat's milk and dream wine. But Maester Aemon had not yet returned from his morning call on Mance Rayder. Sam hung his cloak on a peg and went to lend a hand. But even as he fetched and poured and changed dressings, John's words nagged at him.
"Sam, you're a sweet fool. Open your eyes. It's been happening for days."
It was a good hour before he could excuse himself to feed the ravens. On the way up to the rookery, he stopped to check the tally he had made of last night's count. At the start of the choosing, more than 30 names had been offered, but most of them had withdrawn once it became clear they could not win. 7 remained as of last night. Sir Dennis Mallister had collected 213 tokens, Cutter Pike 187, Lord Slint 74, Uther Jarvik 60, Bowen Marsh 49, Three Finger Hub 5, and Dolores Ed Tullet 1.
"Pip and his stupid japes."
Sam shuffled through the earlier counts. Sir Dennis, Cutter Pike, and Bowen Marsh had all been falling since the 3rd day. Uther Jarvik since the 6th. Only Lord Janus Slint was climbing, day after day after day. He could hear the birds quawking in the rookery, so he put the papers away and climbed the steps to feed them. 3 more ravens had come in, he saw with pleasure.
"Snout!" they cried at him. "Snout! Snout! Snout!"
He had taught them that. Even with the newcomers, the ravenry seemed dismally empty. Few of the birds that Aemon had sent off had returned as yet.
"One reached Stannis, though. One found Dragonstone and a king who still cared."
1,000 leagues south, Sam knew, his father had joined House Tarly to the cause of the boy on the Iron Throne. But neither King Joffrey nor little King Tommen had bestirred himself when the Watch cried out for help.
"What good is a king who will not defend his realm?"
he thought angrily, remembering the night on the Fist of the First Men and the terrible trek to Craster's Keep through darkness, fear, and falling snow. The Queen's men made him uneasy, it was true, but at least they had come. That night at supper, Sam looked for Jon Snow, but he did not see him anywhere in the cavernous stone vault where his brothers now took their meals. He finally took a place on the bench near his other friends. Pip was telling Dolores Ed about the contest they'd had to see which of the straw soldiers could collect the most wilding arrows.
"You were leading most of the way, but Wat of Longlake got 3 in the last day and passed you." "Cool, I never win anything, eh?"
Dolores Ed complained.
"The guards always smiled on Wat, though, eh? When the wildlings knocked him off the Bridge of Skulls, somehow, he landed in a nice deep pool of water, eh? How lucky was that, missing all those rocks, eh?"
"Was it a long fall?" Gren wanted to know. "Did landing in the pool of water save his life?"
"No," said Dolores Ed. "He was dead already, eh? From the axe in his head. Still, it was pretty lucky, eh? Missing the rocks."
Three Finger Hub had promised the brothers roast haunch of mammoth that night, maybe in hopes of cadging a few more votes.
If that was his notion, he should have found a younger mammoth, Sam thought, as he pulled a string of gristle out from between his teeth. Sighing, he pushed the food away. There would be another vote shortly, and the tensions in the air were thicker than the smoke. Cutter Pike sat by the fire, surrounded by rangers from East Watch. Sir Dennis Mallister was near the door with a smaller group of Shadow Tower men.
Jaina Slint has the best place, Sam realized, halfway between the flames and the drafts.
He was alarmed to see Bowen Marsh beside him, wan-faced and haggard, his head still wrapped in linen, but listening to all that Lord Jaina had to say. When he pointed that out to his friends, Pip said,
"And look down there. That's Alistair whispering with Uthul Yarwick."
After the meal, Maester Aemon rose to ask if any of the brothers wished to speak before they cast their tokens. Dolores Ed got up, stone-faced and glum as ever.
"Cor, I just want to say, to whoever is voting for me, that I would certainly make an awful Lord Commander, eh? But, Cor, so would all these others, eh?"
He was followed by Bowen Marsh, who stood with one hand on Lord Slint's shoulder.
"Brothers and friends, I'm asking that my name be withdrawn from this choosing. My wound still troubles me, and the task is too large for me, I fear. But not for Lord Jaina here, who commanded the gold cloaks at King's Landing for many years. Let us all give him our support."
Sam heard angry mutters from Cutter Pike's end of the room, and Sir Dennis looked at one of his companions and shook his head.
"It's too late. The damage is done."
He wondered where John was, and why he had stayed away. Most of the brothers were unlettered, so by tradition the choosing was done by dropping tokens into a big pot-bellied iron kettle that Three-Finger Hub and Owen the Oaf had dragged over from the kitchens. The barrels of tokens were off in a corner behind a heavy drape, so the voters could make their choice unseen. You were allowed to have a friend cast your token if you had duty. So some men took two tokens, three or four, and Sir Dennis and Cutter Pike voted for the garrisons they had left behind. When the hall was finally empty, save for them, Sam and Clydes upended the kettle in front of Maester Aemon. A cascade of seashells, stones, and copper pennies covered the table. Aemon's wrinkled hands sorted with surprising speed, moving the shells here, the stones there, the pennies to one side, the occasional arrowhead, nail, and acorn off to themselves. Sam and Clytus counted the piles, each of them keeping his own tally. Tonight it was Sam's turn to give his results first.
203 for Sir Dennis Mallister, he said. 169 for Cutter Pike. 137 for Lord Jaina Slint, 72 for Uthul Yarwick, 5 for Three-Finger Hob, and 2 for Dolores Ed. I had 168 for Pike, Clyde said. We are 2 votes short by my count, and 1 by Sam's.
Sam's count is correct, said Maester Aemon. John Snow did not cast a token. It makes no matter. No one is close.
Sam was more relieved than disappointed. Even with Bowen Marsh's support, Lord Janus was still only third.
Who are these 5 who keep voting for Three-Finger Hub? He wondered.
Brothers who want him out of the kitchens, said Clydes.
Sir Dennis is down 10 votes since yesterday, Sam pointed out, and Cutter Pike is down almost 20. That's not good.
Not good for their hopes of becoming Lord Commander, certainly, said Maester Aemon. Yet it may be good for the Night's Watch in the end. That is not for us to say. 10 days is not unduly long. There was once a choosing that lasted nearly 2 years, some 700 votes. The brothers will come to a decision in their own time.
Yes, Sam thought, but what decision?
Later, over cups of watered wine, in the privacy of Pip's cell, Sam's tongue loosened, and he found himself thinking aloud.
Cutter Pike and Sir Dennis Mallister
have been losing ground, but between them they still have almost two-thirds," he told Pip and Gren. "Either one would be fine as Lord Commander. Someone needs to convince one of them to withdraw and support the other."
"Someone?" said Gren, doubtfully. "What someone?"
"Gren is so dumb he thinks someone might be him," said Pip. "Maybe when someone is done with Pike and Malister, he should convince King Stannis to marry Queen Cersei, too."
"King Stannis is married," Gren objected.
"What am I going to do with him, Sam?" sighed Pip.
"Cutter Pike and Sir Dennis don't like each other much," Gren argued stubbornly. "They fight about everything."
"Yes, but only because they have different ideas about what's best for the Watch," said Sam. "If we explained..."
"We?" said Pip. "How did someone change to we? I'm the mama's monkey, remember? And Gren is, well, Gren." He smiled at Sam and wiggled his ears. "You now, you're a lord's son, and the Maester Stuart..."
"And Sam the Slayer," said Gren. "You slew another." "It was the dragon glass that killed it," Sam told him for the 100th time.
"A lord's son, the Maester Stuart, and Sam the Slayer," Pip mused. "You could talk to them. Might be."
"I could," said Sam, sounding as gloomy as Dolorous Ed, "if I wasn't too craven to face them."
John prowled around Satin, in a slow circle, sword in hand, forcing him to turn. "Get your shield up," he said.
"It's too heavy," the old town boy complained.
"It's as heavy as it needs to be to stop a sword," John said. "Now get it up." He stepped forward, slashing. Saturn jerked the shield up in time to catch the sword on its rim, and swung his own blade at John's ribs. "Good," John said, when he felt the impact on his own shield. "That was good. But you need to put your body into it. Get your weight behind the steel, and you'll do more damage than with your arm strength alone. Come, try it again. Drive at me. But keep the shield up, or I'll ring your head like a bell." Instead, Satin took a step backward and raised his visor. "John?" he said, in an anxious voice. When he turned, she was standing behind him, with half a dozen Queen's men around her. Small wonder the yard grew so quiet. He had glimpsed Melisande at her night fires, and coming and going about the castle, but never so close. "She's beautiful," he thought. But there was something more than a little unsettling about red eyes. "My lady?"
"The king would speak with you, Jon Snow."
John thrust the practice sword into the earth. "Might I be allowed to change? I am in no fit state to stand before a king."
"We shall await you atop the wall," said Melisande.
"We?" John heard.
"Not he. It's as they say. This is his true queen, not the one he left at Eastwatch."
He hung his mail and plate inside the armory, returned to his own cell, discarded his sweat-stained clothes, and donned a fresh set of blacks. It would be cold and windy in the cage, he knew, and colder and windier still on top of the ice, so he chose a heavy hooded cloak. Last of all, he collected Longclaw and slung the bastard sword across his back. Melisande was waiting for him at the base of the wall. She had sent her queen's men away. "What does His Grace want of me?" John asked her as they entered the cage.
"All you have to give, Jon Snow. He is a king."
He shut the door and pulled the bell cord. The winch began to turn. They rose. The day was bright, and the wall was weeping, long fingers of water trickling down its face and glinting in the sun. In the close confines of the iron cage, he was acutely aware of the red woman's presence.
"She even smells red."
The scent reminded him of Micken's Forge, of the way iron smelled when red hot. The scent was smoke and blood. kissed by fire, he thought, remembering Ygritte. The wind got in amongst Melisande's long red robes and sent them flapping against John's legs as he stood beside her. "You're not cold, my lady?" he asked. She laughed. "Never." The ruby at her throat seemed to pulse in time with the beating of her heart. "The Lord's fire lives within me, Jon Snow. Feel." She put a hand on his cheek and held it there while he felt how warm she was. "That is how life should feel," she told him. "Only death is cold." They found Stannis Baratheon standing alone at the edge of the wall, brooding over the field where he had won his battle, and the great green forest beyond. He was dressed in the same black breeches, tunic, and boots that a brother of the Night's Watch might wear. Only his cloak set him apart, a heavy gold cloak trimmed in black fur and pinned with a brooch in the shape of a flaming heart. "I have brought you the bastard of Winterfell, Your Grace," said Melisande. Stannis turned to study him. Beneath his heavy brow were eyes like bottomless blue pools. His hollow cheeks and strong jaw were covered with a short-cropped blue-black beard that did little to conceal the gauntness of his face, and his teeth were clenched. His neck and shoulders were clenched as well, and his right hand. John found himself remembering something Donald Noy once said about the Baratheon brothers. "Robert was the true steel, Stannis is pure iron, black and hard and strong, but brittle, the way iron gets. He'll break before he bends." Uneasily, he knelt, wondering why this brittle king had need of him. "Rise. I've heard much and more of you, Lord Snow." "I am no lord, sire." John rose. "I know what you have heard, that I am a turncloak and craven, that I slew my brother Corran Halfhand so the wildlings would spare my life, that I rode with Mance Rayder and took a wildling wife." "Aye, all that and more. You're a warg, too, they say, a skin-changer who walks at night as a wolf." King Stannis had a hard smile. "How much of it is true?" "I had a direwolf, Ghost. I left him when I climbed the wall near Greyguard, and have not seen him since. Corran Halfhand commanded me to join the wildlings. He knew they would make me kill him to prove myself, and told me to do whatever they asked of me. The woman was named Ygritte. I broke my vows with her, but I swear to you, on my father's name, that I never turned my cloak." "I believe you," the king said. That startled him. "Why?" Stannis snorted. "I know Janus Slint, and I knew Ned Stark as well. Your father was no friend of mine, but only a fool would doubt his honour or his honesty. You have his look." A big man, Stannis Baratheon, towered over John, but he was so gaunt that he looked 10 years older than he was. "I know more than you might think, Jon Snow. I know it was you who found the dragonglass dagger that Randall Tarly's son used to slay the other." "Ghost found it. The blade was wrapped in a ranger's cloak and buried beneath the fist of the first men. There were other blades as well, spearheads, arrowheads, all dragonglass." "I know you held the gate here," King Stannis said. "If not, I would have come too late." "Donald Noy held the gate. He died below in the tunnel, fighting the King of the Giants." Stannis grimaced. "Noy made my first sword for me, and Robert's warhammer as well. Had the guards seen fit to spare him, he would have made a better Lord Commander for your order than any of these fools who are squabbling over it now." "Cotter Pike and Sir Denis Malister are no fools, sire," John said. "They're good men and capable. Uthul Yarvik as well, in his own way. Lord Mormont trusted each of them." "Your Lord Mormont trusted too easily, else he would not have died as he did. But we were speaking of you. I have not forgotten that it was you who brought us this magic horn and captured Mance Rayder's wife and son." "Darla died," John was saddened by that still. Val is her sister. She and the babe did not require much capturing, Your Grace. You had put the wildlings to flight, and the skin changer, Mance had left to guard his queen, went mad when the eagle burned. John looked at Melisande. Some say that was your doing. She smiled, her long copper hair tumbling across her face.
The Lord of Light has fiery talons, Jon Snow.
John nodded and turned back to the king. Your Grace, you spoke of Val. She has asked to see Mance Rayder to bring his son to him. It would be a kindness.
The man is a deserter from your order. Your brothers are all insisting on his death. Why should I do him a kindness?
John had no answer for that. If not for him, for Val, for her sister's sake, the child's mother.
You are fond of this, Val?
I scarcely know her.
They tell me she is comely.
Very, John admitted.
Beauty can be treacherous. My brother learned that lesson from Cersei Lannister. She murdered him, do not doubt it. Your father and John Aaron as well. He scowled. You rolled with these wildlings. Is there any honour in them, do you think?
Yes, John said. But their own sort of honour, sire.
In Mance Rayder?
Yes, I think so.
In the Lord of Bones?
John hesitated. Rattleshirt, we called him. Treacherous and bloodthirsty. If there's honour in him, he hides it down beneath his suit of bones.
And this other man, this Tormund of the many names who eluded us after the battle. Answer me truly.
Tormund Giantsbane seemed to me the sort of man who would make a good friend and a bad enemy, Your Grace. Stannis gave a curt nod.
Your father was a man of honour. He was no friend to me, but I saw his worth. Your brother was a rebel and a traitor who meant to steal half my kingdom, but no man can question his courage. What of you?
Does he want me to say I love him?
John's voice was stiff and formal, as he said, I am a man of the Night's Watch.
Words, words are wind. Why do you think I abandoned Dragonstone and sailed to the wall, Lord Snow?
I am no lord, sire. You came because we sent for you, I hope, though I could not say why you took so long about it. Surprisingly, Stannis smiled at that.
You're bold enough to be a Stark. Yes, I should have come sooner. If not for my hand, I might not have come at all. Lord Seaworth is a man of humble birth, but he reminded me of my duty, when all I could think of was my rights. I had the cart before the horse, Davos said. I was trying to win the throne to save the kingdom, when I should have been trying to save the kingdom to win the throne.
Stannis pointed north.
There is where I'll find the foe that I was born to fight.
His name may not be spoken, Melisande added softly. He is the god of night and terror, Jon Snow, and these shapes in the snow are his creatures.
They tell me that you slew one of these walking corpses to save Lord Mormont's life, Stannis said. It may be that this is your war as well, Lord Snow, if you will give me your help.
My sword is pledged to the Night's Watch, Your Grace, Jon Snow answered carefully. That did not please the king. Stannis ground his teeth and said,
I need more than a sword from you.
Jon was lost. My lord?
I need the North.
The North?
My brother Rob was king in the North.
Your brother was the rightful Lord of Winterfell. If he had stayed home and done his duty, instead of crowning himself and riding off to conquer the Riverlands, he might be alive today. Be that as it may, you are not Rob, no more than I am Robert.
The harsh words had blown away whatever sympathy John might have had for Stannis. I loved my brother, he said,
and I mine. Yet they were what they were, and so are we. I am the only true king in Westeros, north or south, and you are Ned Stark's bastard.
Stannis studied him with those dark blue eyes. Tywin Lannister has named Roose Bolton his Warden of the North, to reward him for betraying your brother. The Iron Men are fighting amongst themselves since Balon Greyjoy's death, yet they still hold Moat Cailin, Deepwood Mott, Torrin Square, and most of the Stony Shore. Your father's lands are bleeding, and I have neither the strength nor the time to staunch the wounds. What is needed is a Lord of Winterfell, a loyal Lord of Winterfell. He is looking at me, John thought, stunned. Winterfell is no more. Theon Greyjoy put it to the torch. Granite does not burn easily, Stannis said. The castle can be rebuilt in time. It's not the walls that make a lord, it's the man. Your Northmen do not know me, have no reason to love me, yet I will need their strength in the battles yet to come. I need a son of Eddard Stark to win them to my banner. He would make me Lord of Winterfell. The wind was gusting, and John felt so light-headed he was half afraid it would blow him off the wall. Your Grace, he said, you forget. I am a Snow, not a Stark. It's you who are forgetting, King Stannis replied. Melisandre put a warm hand on John's arm.
A king can remove the taint of bastardy with a stroke, Lord Snow. Lord Snow.
Sir Alistair Thorne had named him that, to mock his bastard birth. Many of his brothers had taken to using it as well, some with affection, others to wound. But suddenly it had a different sound to it in John's ears. It sounded real. Yes, he said hesitantly, kings have legitimized bastards before, but I am still a brother of the Night's Watch. I knelt before Hartree, and swore to hold no lands and father no children.
John,
Melisandre was so close he could feel the warmth of her breath.
R'hllor is the only true god. A vow sworn to a tree has no more power than one sworn to your shoes. Open your heart, and let the light of the Lord come in. Burn these weirwoods, and accept Winterfell as a gift of the Lord of Light.
When John had been very young, too young to understand what it meant to be a bastard, he used to dream that one day Winterfell might be his. Later, when he was older, he had been ashamed of those dreams. Winterfell would go to Rob, and then his sons, or to Bran or Rickon, should Rob die childless. And after them came Sansa and Arya. Even to dream otherwise seemed disloyal, as if he were betraying them in his heart, wishing for their deaths.
I never wanted this,
he thought, as he stood before the blue-eyed king and the red woman. I loved Rob, loved all of them. I never wanted any harm to come to any of them. But it did. And now there's only me. All he had to do was say the word, and he would be John Stark, and never more a Snow. All he had to do was pledge this king his fealty, and Winterfell was his. All he had to do was forswear his vows again. And this time it would not be a ruse. To claim his father's castle, he must turn against his father's gods. King Stannis gazed off north again, his gold cloak streaming from his shoulders.
It may be that I am mistaken in you, Jon Snow. We both know the things that are said of bastards. You may lack your father's honour, or your brother's skill in arms, but you are the weapon the Lord has given me. I have found you here, as you found the cache of Dragonglass beneath the fist, and I mean to make use of you. Even Azor Ahai did not win his war alone. I killed 1,000 wildlings, took another 1,000 captive, and scattered the rest. But we both know they will return. Melisandre has seen it in her fires. This Tormund Thunderfist is likely reforming them even now, and planning some new assault. And the more we bleed each other, the weaker we shall all be when the real enemy falls upon us.
John had come to that same realization. As you say, Your Grace. He wondered where this king was going. Whilst your brothers have been struggling to decide who shall lead them, I have been speaking with this Mance Raider. He ground his teeth. A stubborn man, that one, and prideful. He will leave me no choice but to give him to the flames. But we took other captives as well, other leaders. The one who calls himself the Lord of Bones, some of their clan chiefs, the new Magnar of Thenn. Your brothers will not like it, no more than your father's lords, but I mean to allow the wildlings through the wall. Those who will swear me their fealty pledge to keep the king's peace and the king's laws, and take the Lord of Light as their god. Even the giants, if those great knees of theirs can bend. I will settle them on the gift once I have wrested it away from your new Lord Commander. When the cold winds rise, we shall live or die together. It is time we made alliance against our common foe. He looked at John. Would you agree? My father dreamed of resettling the gift, John admitted. He and my Uncle Benjamin used to talk of it. He never thought of settling it with wildlings, though. But he never rode with wildlings, either. He did not fool himself. The free folk would make for unruly subjects and dangerous neighbours. Yet when he weighed Ygritte's red hair against the coal-blue eyes of the whites, the choice was easy. I agree. Good, King Stannis said. For the surest way to seal a new alliance is with a marriage. I mean to wed my lord of Winterfell to this wildling princess. Perhaps John had ridden with the free folk too long. He could not help but laugh. Your Grace, he said, captive or no, if you think you can just give Val to me, I fear you have a deal to learn about wildling women. Whoever weds her had best be prepared to climb in a tower window and carry her off at sword point. "Whoever?" Stannis gave him a measuring look. "Does this mean you will not wed the girl?" "I warn you, she is part of the price you must pay if you want your father's name and your father's castle. This match is necessary to help assure the loyalty of our new subjects." "Are you refusing me, Jon Snow?" "No." John said too quickly. It was Winterfell the king was speaking of, and Winterfell was not to be lightly refused. "I mean, this has all come very suddenly, Your Grace. Might I beg you for some time to consider?" "As you wish. But consider quickly. I am not a patient man, as your black brothers are about to discover." Stannis put a thin, fleshless hand on John's shoulder. "Say nothing of what we discussed here today, to anyone. But when you return, you need only bend your knee, lay your sword at my feet, and pledge yourself to my service, and you shall rise again as John Stark, the Lord of Winterfell." Tyrion. When he heard noises through the thick wooden door of his cell, Tyrion Lannister prepared to die. "Past time," he thought. "Come on, come on, make an end to it." He pushed himself to his feet. His legs were asleep from being folded under him. He bent down and rubbed the knives from them. "I will not go stumbling and waddling to the headsman's block." He wondered whether they would kill him down here in the dark, or drag him through the city so Sir Ilyen Payne could lop his head off. After his mamma's fast for trial, his sweet sister and loving father might prefer to dispose of him quietly rather than risk a public execution. "I could tell the mob a few choice things if they let me speak. But would they be that foolish?" As the keys rattled and the door to his cell pushed inward, creaking, Tyrion pressed back against the dampness of the wall, wishing for a weapon. "I can still bite and kick. I'll die with a taste of blood in my mouth, that's something." He wished he'd been able to think of some rousing last words. "Bugger you all" was not like to earn him much of a place in the histories. Torchlight fell across his face. He shielded his eyes with a hand. "Come on! Are you frightened of a dwarf? Do it, you son of a poxy whore! His voice had grown hoarse from disuse. Is that any way to speak about our lady mother? The man moved forward, a torch in his left hand. This is even more ghastly than my cell at River Run, though not quite so dank. For a moment, Tyrion could not breathe.
You?
Well, most of me. Jamie was gaunt, his hair hacked short. I left a hand at Harrenhal. Bringing the brave companions across the narrow sea was not one of father's better notions. He lifted his arm, and Tyrion saw the stump. A bark of hysterical laughter burst from his lips.
"Oh, gods!" he said. "Jamie, I am so sorry, but gods be good, look at the two of us, handless and noseless, the Lannister boys."
There were days when my hands smelt so bad, I wished I was noseless. Jamie lowered his torch, so the light bathed his brother's face. An impressive scar. Tyrion turned away from the glare.
They made me fight a battle without my big brother to protect me.
I heard tell you almost burned the city down.
A filthy lie. I only burned the river.
Abruptly, Tyrion remembered where he was and why.
Are you here to kill me?
Now that's ungrateful. Perhaps I should leave you here to rot, if you're going to be so discourteous.
Rotting is not the fate Cersei has in mind for me.
Well, no, if truth be told. You're to be beheaded on the morrow, out on the old tourney grounds. Tyrion laughed again.
Will there be food? You'll have to help me with my last words. My wits have been running about like a rat in a root cellar.
You won't need last words. I'm rescuing you. Jamie's voice was strangely solemn.
Who said I required rescue?
You know, I'd almost forgotten what an annoying little man you are. Now that you've reminded me, I do believe I'll let Cersei cut your head off after all.
Oh, no, you won't.
He waddled out of his cell.
Is it day or night up above? I've lost all sense of time.
3 hours past midnight. The city sleeps. Jamie slid the torch back into its sconce, on the wall between the cells. The corridor was so poorly lit that Tyrion almost stumbled on the turnkey, sprawled across the cold stone floor. He prodded him with a toe.
Is he dead?
Asleep. The other three as well. The eunuch dosed their wine with sweet sleep, but not enough to kill them, or so he swears. He is waiting back at the stair, dressed up in a septon's robe. You're going down into the sewers, and from there to the river. A galley is waiting in the bay. Varys has agents in the free cities who will see that you do not lack for funds. But try not to be conspicuous. Cersei will send men after you, I have no doubt. You might do well to take another name.
Another name? Oh, certainly. And when the faceless man come to kill me, I'll say, no, you have the wrong man. I'm a different dwarf with a hideous facial scar.
Both Lannisters laughed at the absurdity of it all. Then Jamie went to one knee and kissed him quickly, once on each cheek, his lips brushing against the puckered ribbon of scar tissue.
Thank you, brother, Tyrion said. For my life?
It was a debt I owed you. Jamie's voice was strange.
A debt?
He cocked his head. I do not understand. Good. Some doors are best left closed.
Oh, dear, said Tyrion. Is there something grim and ugly behind it? Could it be that someone said something cruel about me once? I'll try not to weep. Tell me.
Tyrion. Jamie is afraid.
Tell me,
Tyrion said again. His brother looked away.
Tysha,
he said softly.
Tysha?
His stomach tightened.
What of her?
She was no whore. I never bought her for you. That was a lie that father commanded me to tell. Tysha was... she was... what she seemed to be, a crofter's daughter, chance met on the road. Tyrion could hear the faint sound of his own breath, whistling hollowly through the scar of his nose. Jaime could not meet his eyes.
Pasha?
He tried to remember what she had looked like. A girl? She was only a girl, no older than Sansa.
My wife? He croaked. She wed me.
For your gold, father said. She was low-born. You were a Lannister of Casterly Rock. All she wanted was the gold, which made her no different from a whore, so it would not be a lie, not truly, and he said that you required a sharp lesson, that you would learn from it, and thank me later.
Thank you?
Tyrion's voice was choked.
He gave her to his guards, a barracks full of guards. He made me watch.
Aye, and more than watch.
I took her too, my wife.
I never knew he would do that. You must believe me.
Oh, must I?
Tyrion snarled.
Why should I believe you about anything ever? She was my wife.
Tyrion. He hit him. It was a slap, backhanded, but he put all his strength into it, all his fear, all his rage, all his pain. Jaime was squatting, unbalanced. The blow sent him tumbling backward to the floor. I suppose I earned that. Oh, you've earned more than that, Jaime. You and my sweet sister and our loving father, yes. I can't begin to tell you what you've earned. But you'll have it. That, I swear to you, a Lannister always pays his debts. Tyrion waddled away, almost stumbling over the turnkey again in his haste. Before he had gone a dozen yards, he bumped up against an iron gate that closed the passage. Oh, gods! It was all he could do not to scream. Jaime came up behind him. I have the jailer's keys.
Then use them!
Tyrion stepped aside. Jaime unlocked the gate, pushed it open, and stepped through. He looked back over his shoulder. Are you coming?
Not with you.
Tyrion stepped through.
Give me the keys and go. I will find Varys on my own.
He cocked his head and stared up at his brother with his mismatched eyes.
Jaime, can you fight left-handed?
Rather less well than you, Jaime said bitterly.
Good. Then we will be well matched if we should ever meet again. The cripple and the dwarf.
Jaime handed him the ring of keys. I gave you the truth. You owe me the same. Did you do it? Did you kill him? The question was another knife twisting in his guts.
Are you sure you want to know?
Asked Tyrion.
Joffrey would have been a worse king than Aerys ever was. He stole his father's dagger and gave it to a footpad to slit the throat of Brandon Stark. Did you know that?
I thought he might have.
Well, a son takes after his father. Joff would have killed me as well, once he came into his power, for the crime of being short and ugly, of which I am so conspicuously guilty.
You have not answered my question.
You poor, stupid, blind, cripple fool! Must I spell out everything for you? Very well. Cersei is a lying whore. She's been fucking Lancel and Osmond Kettleblack and probably Moonboy, for all I know. And I am the monster they all say I am. Yes, I killed your vile son.
He made himself grin. It must have been a hideous sight to see, there in the torch-lit gloom. Jaime turned without a word and walked away. Tyrion watched him go, striding on his long, strong legs, and part of him wanted to call out to tell him that it wasn't true, to beg for his forgiveness. But then he thought of Tysha, and he held his silence. He listened to the receding footsteps until he could hear them no longer, then waddled off to look for Varys.
The eunuch was lurking in the dark of a twisting turnpike stair, garbed in a moth-eaten brown robe with a hood that hid the paleness of his face.
"You were so long, I feared that something had gone amiss," he said when he saw Tyrion.
"Oh, no," Tyrion assured him, in poisonous tones. "What could possibly have gone amiss?" He twisted his head back to stare up.
"I sent for you during my trial." "I could not come. The Queen had me watched night and day. I dared not help you."
"You're helping me now?"
"Am I? Oh, no."
Varys giggled. It seemed strangely out of place in this place of cold stone and echoing darkness.
"Your brother can be most persuasive."
"Varys, you are as cold and slimy as a slug. Has anyone ever told you? You did your best to kill me. Perhaps I ought to return the favor."
The eunuch sighed. "The faithful dog is kicked, and no matter how the spider weaves, he's never loved. But if you slay me here, I fear for you, my lord. You may never find your way back to daylight."
His eyes glittered in the shifting torchlight, dark and wet.
"These tunnels are full of traps for the unwary."
Tyrion snorted.
"Unwary? I am the wariest man who ever lived. You help see to that."
He rubbed at his nose.
"So tell me, wizard, where is my innocent maiden wife?"
"I have found no trace of Lady Sansa in King's Landing, sad to say, nor of Sir Dontus Hollard, who by rights should have turned up somewhere drunk by now. They were seen together on the Serpentine Steps the night she vanished. After that, nothing. There was much confusion that night. My little birds are silent."
Varys gave a gentle tug at the dwarf's sleeve and pulled him into the stair.
"My lord, we must weigh. Your path is down."
"Well, that's no lie, at least."
Tyrion waddled along in the eunuch's wake, his heels scraping against the rough stone as they descended. It was very cold within the stairwell, a damp, bone-chilling cold that set him to shivering at once.
"What part of the dungeons are these?"
he asked.
"Maegor the Cruel decreed 4 levels of dungeons for his castle," Varys replied. "On the upper level there are large cells where common criminals may be confined together. They have narrow windows set high in the walls. The second level has the smaller cells where high-born captives are held. They have no windows, but torches in the halls cast light through the bars. On the third level the cells are smaller and the doors are wood. The black cells, men call them. That was where you were kept, and Eddard Stark before you. But there is a level lower still. Once a man is taken down to the fourth level, he never sees the sun again, nor hears a human voice, nor breathes a breath free of agonizing pain. Maegor had the cells on the fourth level built for torment."
They had reached the bottom of the steps. An unlighted door opened before them.
"This is the fourth level. Give me your hand, my lord. It is safer to walk in darkness here. There are things you would not wish to see."
Tyrion hung back a moment. Varys had already betrayed him once. Who knew what game the eunuch was playing? And what better place to murder a man than down in the darkness, in a place that no one knew existed? His body might never be found. On the other hand, what choice did he have? To go back up the stairs and walk out of the main gate? No, that would not serve. Jaime would not be afraid, he thought, before he remembered what Jaime had done to him. He took the eunuch by the hand and let himself be led through the black, following the soft scrape of leather on stone. Varys walked quickly, from time to time whispering, "Careful, there are 3...